It's Steve Cochran Show here at 720 WGN. I am Justin Kaufman. Steve is here. Dave Ennett as well. Mary Vandeveld, Mary Sandberg, the whole gang as we get ready to broadcast this morning away for you.
In the wrong place.
That's right. This is a great show lined up today. I'm so excited to get at it. This is going to be a fun show. Major General John Borling will be in studio coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. Chuck Todd coming up in just a couple minutes. We're also going to talk with Ron Kittle. I'm very excited in my continuing life goal to interview all of the 1983 White Sox.
So turn a microphone
there
on.
Go. There you go,
Steve. You look so nice today. You dressed up for the general.
No, for you.
Oh wow,
you look good, buddy.
Thank you. You look awesome.
So thank you. How many have you done?
That's a good question. I think none.
So Kittle will be one.
Kittle will be one.
Well, that's a small bucket for your bucket list.
I was thinking about it this morning. I was thinking about all the different 83 White Sox, and I could do the whole lineup. I was like, wow, this is my some memories do not go away. I could name you Rudy Law.
Rudy Law.
Yeah, Rudy Law was on that team.
All right, Dave, you're control the board. Dave, Rudy Law, who you got?
Rudy Law, I will go with Carlton Fisk.
Yes.
Pudge Fisk, number 72.
Pachoric was on that team.
Pachoric, yes, Dave.
Let's go with, Ozzie Guillen.
No,
Ozzie came in 84.
Yeah, yeah.
Lamar Hoyt.
There we go.
All right, that's one good. More, Justin.
All right, I'll go with the other Law brother, Vance Law, playing third base on that team.
And I will go with L.A. Law.
Okay, so, I was going to go with Jerry Dibzinski.
There you go.
Easy for you to say.
Jude Law.
Yes.
He played on the 83 Sox as well.
All right, let's do the top six at six. And do we have music for this? All right, hit it.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
All right, Justin, give me item number one. Go ahead, turn your mic
on.
There
we go. President Trump signed an executive order yesterday meant to end the zero tolerance policy that separated immigrants' families at the border. Just in today, breaking from Associated Press as well, immigrant children as young as 14 housed in a juvenile detention center in Virginia say they were beaten while handcuffed and locked up in solitary confinement, left nude, shivering on the concrete, tied to chairs.
There was a story yesterday that one of the toddlers actually had to have the diaper change done by one of the other kids because there weren't enough adults to take care of him as well.
This story right now, the AP story that broke this morning, is trending. You can see it just blowing up on Twitter as we speak.
Yeah, it's awful. And I'd like to tell you it's over, but there are 2,300 kids who have been separated from their parents. And incredibly, the administration has no idea what they're going to do next. There's no plan. There's no line of thinking as to what's going to happen next. They admitted as much last night, but they said, no, now we're on it.
Yeah, and they addressed the keeping families together, but they said that they're going to keep them together indefinitely, which is another concern for many Americans.
Next. Quack. Millennials, particularly
that's
those.
My job, yeah.
Where, there you go.
Quack.
Millennials, particularly those who have fallen in the age group of 25 to 29, have dominated the Cook County population since at least 2010. Mm. And the 2017 population estimates are out. 25 to 29-year-olds, still the biggest group. Mm. What does that mean? What does that mean? Does that mean that the majority of the city will be looking at screens instead of looking at you? Probably.
I think also the question is if they'll stay. Because, we have more people leaving now than ever.
I think it means more 4 a.m. bars.
I think both are true. Next. Governor Rauner's latest ad calls Mr. Pritzker the porcelain prince of tax avoidance. I'll have Pat Brady explain that in a little bit because he did a press conference about this when the porcelain story came out. J.B. Pritzker essentially ripped out a couple of toilets in a Gold Coast property so he could get a better tax property tax deal. More on that later. Next. Who's your favorite browser? Dave, what browser do you enjoy?
I enjoy Firefox.
You're a Firefox guy. Vandeveld, what browser do you like?
Firefox.
Firefox?
Mm-hmm.
Sandberg.
I use Google Chrome.
I'm a Google Chrome guy.
Yeah, Chrome.
Chrome wins 3-2. Here's the deal.
Firefox popularity contest,
yeah, really.
Steve.
Tell that to Google. Firefox is back. Mozilla's redesigned web browser with strong privacy features intended to compete with Google Chrome. You know who hates Google Chrome is our IT guy, the head of our IT department.
I can understand why. It's very proprietary.
He's not very fond of Firefox either.
He doesn't like
when I use Firefox.
Oh, he does not like Firefox at all.
Does he not like the internet?
I'm not sure, but Firefox is the best browser in the world.
One of the computers in the old studio, when you would log on, the only browser you could use was Internet Explorer. That's what Art likes, Internet Explorer. And it was like, I don't even know. What do you do?
Internet Explorer 98.
Click a mouse? What do you do?
And the funny thing is Internet Explorer stopped being serviced by Microsoft about a year and a half ago.
It was not intuitive. Let me just put it.
Art's old school. You know, he's the antique guy in the IT department. And then this. Justin Trudeau says Canada will legalize marijuana from coast to coast on October 17th.
Wow. He can just do that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And deal it.
And deal it.
Yeah. Travel reservations for October 18th have spiked.
Yeah. Canadian weed, though? Really?
I don't know. I can tell you right now, maple syrup is going to be popular. All right? They're going to put maple syrup on everything.
And pancakes.
Right. Snack sugar buzz. And let me go to Sandberg for this final item. Sandberg.
Yes.
You going to tell me about the final item?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I heard the quack. Mm-hmm. So for those of you not on Instagram, Instagram.
I prefer to call it the Insta.
The Insta?
Yeah.
Most people call it the gram, but that's okay.
Old people call it the gram. The kids call it Insta.
Oh, there you go.
Know that.
Look at that,
just so
Steve.
You know. So you're on top of it, Steve. So there are all these social influencers on there. So you follow people that use products and clothing and things like that.
So that's how the Kardashians got rich.
Well, yeah, but it's cooler than that and not as sex tape involved. But so now Instagram is... they're seeing a stronger presence of women 60 and older. They're calling them the glamorous grandmas. And they are doing the social influencing to older women that, you know, don't want to dress like 20-year-olds with little jean shorts and things like that. And so there's one that Icon Accidental. She's got 505,000 followers.
Icon Accidental.
Mm-hmm.
And what is she post?
Her name is Lynn. It's like her wearing cooler clothes, not just being, you know, trying told to shop up and look like you're 85, you know. Yeah. So it's just...
No mom jeans.
They're slaying. Yeah, it's, you know, old isn't what you think it is. And so...
Old isn't what I think it is.
Why don't you call it grand-gram? Grand-gram would make...
Grand-gram. I guess we could do that, but
I need to get on this.
You should, Mary, because it's exactly what you're looking for, because you know how you ask about putting clothes together and things
like that?
Oh,
yeah, I do.
And you're an awesome, cool young grandma, and
well, thank you.
You don't have to, you know, then fall into some kind of category. So, it's
and you don't have to have a sex tape to do this, apparently.
Yes. So I just people out
news.
There.
Mary,
my wife's a little younger than that.
Oh, but Karen would be.
But she's on Instagram. She's not. She got off Facebook.
She's on the Insta.
She's on the IG.
What are the advantages of being on Instagram? IG.
It's just pictures. There's less words,
and
it's
they go away right away.
It's not as political and depressing.
Yeah, it's
so just pictures.
And you don't hurt your head when you use it because there's not less words.
Yeah, there's people don't fight on Instagram.
Yeah, there's no one asking you to join a page.
Is this going to ruin it the way Facebook got ruined by old people?
I don't think so, because these women are top notch. They're slaying, so people should check it out.
They're slaying. Well, if they're slaying, we should get the law after them.
There are 17-year-olds all across the country right now going, Instagram's so played out.
Yes.
They're already on to something else. We don't even know that.
Last Tuesday.
And so far, I have not seen pictures of anybody gramming their Metamucil this morning.
Ah, see, there you go. Well, listen, we'll keep an eye on it. All right, there's your top 6 at 6. Now you're smarter.
That's all today for the top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Yeah, you can check out the Lighthouse Gallery. What's on that? All the pictures of Michigan Avenue? Is that it? All the pictures of Michigan Avenue? I'll say yes. Looks like I got a thumbs up there.
Speaking of that, I saw a ton of those lighthouses on Instagram yesterday.
On the gram?
Yeah.
Or the Insta? Which
on
one?
The Insta.
Just say Insta.
I'm following
Nova.
Steve.
Yeah. Just Insta. But yeah, so our people at our station went and took pictures of all the lighthouses, and they linked it to our interview yesterday with the people from the Chicago Lighthouse. So
okay. And please support.
Check it out at WGMradio.com.
Please support the Chicago Lighthouse in all ways. Nick's coming up.
He is Nick at Night. DiGiulio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
Good morning, Nick DiGiulio.
Good morning, Steve Cochran.
Let's jump in, my friend. Tag, you saw it?
Yeah, with the folks. We went last week.
And then you played tag with your parents, like in a lobby?
We did, yes. Yes, we did. And we've actually been playing that game since I was born.
That's of course.
Like the guys in the movie.
Funny, not
my parents
funny?
My parents liked it more than I did.
Okay.
Yeah, they enjoyed it. They thought it was pretty good. I thought it had moments, but mostly I would have rather have seen a documentary about the real guys. I think because at the end of the movie, during the credits, the final credits, they actually show footage of the real guys tagging each other and playing games. And I thought, you know, what I just saw was kind of dumb. I think a documentary about these guys would have been much more interesting. But there are moments, and you can't deny the cast. I mean, the cast is great. I like every single person in the movie, and each person has moments that make you laugh. And there is a cameo by Thomas Middleditch from Silicon Valley that is truly hilarious. But my parents really enjoyed it. And obviously last week I also saw Incredibles 2, which is just as good as the first one. It's tremendous.
The director for Tag was in here. We love him. He's great. And if you didn't see it, CBS Sunday Morning a couple of weeks ago did about a 5-minute piece on those knuckleheads that are the true guys. So grab that if you haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, no, I've those guys were making this, you know, they were doing the circuit, man. They were on every talk show possible. And so I saw it and I looked up some stuff on YouTube. And while I was doing that, I just kept thinking, boy, it would be a better movie if they made a movie about these guys for real.
Yeah, they're nuts. You know?
And
nuts in a fun way. Jurassic World this weekend, we don't need to talk about that. You know, one of the great things about your show, Nick DiGilio, is you always have something that's driving you nuts. There's always something that's making you a little crazy. There's something on the pop culture bulletin board. That's right, I said it, bulletin board, that Nick's got a pin in. What's driving you nuts?
Well, I'm kind of going crazy in the pop culture world or just like a movie-going world. These movie pass things are driving me nuts. These deals that suddenly AMC and these other places are making where you can get a movie pass and you can use it. You know, you can pay $20 a month and you have to go 6 times a week or something, you know, and I think it's twisting things around. And I also, as the movie going experience goes, it just keeps getting worse because people talk. I know we've talked about this for years, but now it's just absurd. I mean, the phones don't go off despite the 55 warnings that come before the trailers. You can see the glowing screens, you know, like every other person has their phone on at some point during the movie. And, you know, I think people think that they're in their home because you can make a home theater at your house where you can talk on the phone, where you can pause it, where you can throw something in the microwave. And I think some people think that that's where they are. And so, you know, the movie going experience, I think, has declined despite the fact that the movie going experience in terms of technology has improved. The theaters, the sound, the IMAX, the Dolby. All that stuff has improved, so the experience is great. It's just the problem is we have to see movies with other people.
Well, can I make one suggestion? And that is that they not put a 15-year-old kid in charge of telling people to turn their phones off, and they hire a big, angry guy, or potentially, like golf courses do, a really cranky old dude who comes in and says, turn your phone off or I'm taking it away.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I will say this, though.
Yeah.
I do want to mention two movies this year that completely turned that whole issue on its ear. They were both horror movies. One was A Quiet Place,
right?
Which was a movie that forced people to shut up and pay attention and not even open their candy wrappers for fear of being killed. So I like that. And the other was for my money, the best movie of the year, Hereditary, which was so intense and so insane that people were too scared to open their mouths. So let's make more horror movies that shut the audience up. That's my goal.
And scare them to death. All right. next movie club movie is what?
Forrest Gump. Zemeckis Fest continues. And this is the big one that he won the best director for, won best picture. One of my favorite movies. It'll be on the big screen on July 10th. $10 to get in. Parking is free. And you can order your tickets at amctheaters.com.
All right, man, hold on a second. I'm going to talk to you off the air. And Chuck Todd's coming up at 6:30. Headlines next, 720 WGN.
I'm friends with the monster.
Oh, he's a monster.
I'm sitting there tweeting.
Monster.
Big, big, big tweeting.
I love you. It's a guy, but I love you.
6:42, the great Chuck Todd, host of Meet the Press, MTB Daily, and the 1947 podcast. Joins us now. Good morning, Chuck. How are you?
Morning, Mr. Cochran. How are you?
Did I congratulate you yet on the Stanley Cup?
I don't know. I don't know if you did.
Have you? I don't know if you did, but I am.
You had it at the office.
Bandwagoned.
Yeah, you had it at the office, right?
And I will now admit something that I would not at the time.
Yes.
I touched it. But I touched the Stanley Cup before the Caps had won it, and I didn't want to say anything. I didn't want to be the
jinx.
Good
call. Good call.
So I'm glad to know I'm not a jinx, and I can say I've touched the Stanley Cup.
Well, as you
again, never shared that photo publicly.
Well, thanks for breaking news. And as you know, the Stanley Cup was coming here every other year until the last couple of years. So we've had some exposure to it. And one thing I would advise you as my friend is don't kiss it because you don't know where it's been.
Don't know where it's been, especially inside. What's been inside the cup?
Oh, my God. Oh, God. But congratulations to the Caps, who are looking for a new coach. If anybody's got a resume, I'd get it to Ted Leonsis quickly.
Oh, man. I tell you, that one, that's dumb. But you know what? I kind of understand it. Because the Caps were going to dump Trotsky if he didn't win the cup. So, you know, why does he want to be here after winning it? I get it.
Yeah,
it's a bummer,
weird.
But I get it.
Yeah, it's weird. Speaking of weird, the President of the United States last night in Duluth seemed to be taking credit for changing a rule that he made in some sort of stretch to be heroic while he sort of also tried to tamp it down. What's going on here?
Well, as you know, this president never likes to admit failure, never likes to admit error, never likes to admit weakness, never likes to cave in. All of those things happened, so you can't admit it. So you instead turn yourself into a savior. I mean, it is a pattern with him that when he is cornered and he has to do something he doesn't want to do, then he then just rewrites the story with him as the hero. That everybody else failed to lead, so suddenly I have to do this. I have to, you know, I'm the one who started punching myself in the face, so I'm the one that has to stop punching myself in the face. But because that's essentially what he was doing politically, if you want to look here. But he is somehow making himself the hero in his own story.
This is like the arsonist who turns out to be a guy on the fire department, except at least that one's a little quiet.
Yeah, look, he didn't. Here's the thing. He backed down because of massive pressure. I mean, look, it's a significant moment in that it took 18 months, but we saw the first guardrail erected, right? We've been talking about the guardrails and when would there, you know, would the rest of the Republican Party ever serve as a guardrail to this president? And, you know, for 18 months, the answer was no. And it was a collective effort, and it was, you know, but, you know, he lost Ted Cruz. He lost Mark Meadows.
Yeah.
Right. He was losing. He had lost everybody in elected Washington. Okay. In the Republican side of things, everybody he had lost other than Steve King. And when that's the last guy standing next to you,
it's not a good team picture.
You've got a not a good sight.
Now, pro-immigration advocates, they have to be worried about this executive order because the word indefinitely shows up in the order talking about keeping families together indefinitely under, being detained for those seeking asylum or coming across the border illegally. So I would assume that the Democrats and advocates in this case aren't happy about that language.
Well, it's funny, you know, there's some conspiracy theorists that think that that was put in there purposely, almost taunting the courts to kill this, right? The bottom line is this, is that whether you believe it was that language put in there on purpose or not, the courts have made this pretty clear that, hey, Congress needs to codify this, right? This can't be done via executive order, and you can't keep doing it this way. If you want more time to process this, then put it into the law. And so what I think's got to happen is that and the Democrats, if they do care about this stuff, need to need to be willing to work with the other side here, and they need to codify this. I mean, the fact is most elected Democrats in the United States Senate, I'm not going to speak for the United States House, would like some rules of the road on immigration, would like some border security, would like these things. So it would behoove them to work with a compromise that gives the government more time to deal with this, because the fact of the matter is the system is overloaded, right? We are getting 50,000 claims, people trying to come over the border a month, because Central America is a mess. Central America is totally unsafe right now.
Yeah, exactly.
In so many different ways. I mean, this is the real problem, is that you have not quite failed states, but pretty close, in Honduras, in El Salvador, in Nicaragua. And that's where this is all coming from. And if I lived there, you'd be like, yeah, I'll risk, being separated from my kid, not so that I know I'm not going to get killed in my home country. You know, that's the this is what frustrates me, and this goes back five presidents, our total ignorance and our total lack of a Latin American policy here. You know, we've sort of walked away from the region so many times, and it's been Democrat and Republican president. Nobody's talking about figuring that piece of the puzzle out, right? That would, that's the source of our issue here.
Yeah, well, Congress is a massive failure, and has been on both sides. The Democrats are waiting for the Republicans to fail harder, which is not a strategy. Having said all that, right, the most important story this morning is 2,300 kids. What happens to them?
Well, and that's what's unclear, is that how do they, for those whose parents were criminally detained, right, detained for prosecution, the government right now is not making it clear that they're going to be able to reunite these families. They're not making it clear whether this was retroactive in the order. They're not right now. It doesn't appear they're treating it retroactively, which means you're just sitting there going, if you're in the Trump White House, you're like, what? So here you finally backed down, you rescinded the order, but now you're not going to reconnect families. So you're going to draw this process out, for pictures to be seen for weeks at a time. So I don't know why the government isn't at least publicly saying they're going to prioritize reuniting these kids with their parents. But right now it doesn't appear that is a priority. And I think that's a way for this story to get worse for the president.
Yeah, I mean, there was a report out of the administration last night that a top official inside said, well, we're going to do our best. What? You did
right.
This.
Sort of shrugging their shoulder. And then that person backed down and just said, oh, we're still trying to figure this out. I mean, they at least realized that was a bad look. It was an HHS person, I think, that said that. And then they have since withdrawn that. But look, they don't have an idea of how to do this. That was the problem. When they announced the policy, they didn't really have a good plan to enforce it. And now that they're rescinding it, if you didn't have a good plan to enforce it, then of course you don't have a good plan to sort of, fix it or retreat on it as ordered.
It's Chuck Todd, MTP Daily, the 1947 podcast, which is a must listen all the time. Go binge listen and meet the press on Sunday. Thanks. Thanks, bud.
Appreciate it, guys.
See you later. That's Chuck Todd from Meet the Press, who knows more about everything going on in Washington. I don't know how his head hasn't exploded.
That's why he's got three different outlets.
Nice kid from Miami, ends up in D.C., but I'm glad he's there. John Borling coming up, General John Borling, coming up after 7 o'clock, who once got Pat Brady drunk on one drink, and as an Irishman, that's not easy.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio,
Steve Cochran on 720 WGN.
655, Steve Cochran Show. One quick text here. Hey, Steve, you got a plan? Does Chuck Todd have a plan? It's easy to complain. Do you have a plan? Yeah, here's the plan. When I valet park my car, I get a ticket. That way I know I'm going to get my car back. When a child is taken away by the United States government, the most advanced nation in the world, they ought to have a valet ticket so you can get the kid back with the parent. And then where do you put him? Well, if you have to put these people inside a Walmart that's built with cages, at least put them in with their children. But the children will have some sort of comfort.
It's not your job, Steve, to come up with the ideas for how we deal with the big ticket issues of our time. That's what politicians run for office for. That's what they get paid to do. So I hate that comment when people always comment, oh, you got a better idea? Let's hear it. You're like, well, I'm not getting paid to come up with that idea. That's their job. That's why they're congressmen, senators, and presidents, and all that kind of jazz.
Can you imagine that these kids are taken away with no log of what happened? Like, if Ross and Amy, when they were kids, had that happen, or God forbid, or Miles, why wouldn't they know where you're going?
Yeah.
You're being processed because you're an illegal. I should know where you are, and I should know whose kid is yours.
Right.
It's just phenomenal that there's
even my dentist has a good tracking record.
Right.
I went to my dentist yesterday, and he's like, we're changing from paper to electronic. I'm like, well, that's good for 2018.
Yeah, so
they're getting it done at the dentist's office.
Hey, what's this Coco story?
Yeah, this is breaking news. Coco, the gorilla famous for communicating in sign language, died at the age of 46 today. At the Foundation's Preserve in California, Santa Cruz. That's where Coco was retired.
Is that a typical lifespan for a gorilla? That type of gorilla?
That's a great question for a gorilla expert.
Dave?
Dave Bennett?
Dave, is that a typical lifespan for a gorilla?
I would say somewhere in the general, I have no idea.
How old was the gorilla?
46.
That is beyond the lifespan of
there
a gorilla.
You do have a gorilla expert.
Yeah. 35 to 40 years is the lifespan of the average gorilla.
What if they eat right? What if they eat right and take care of themselves and get plenty of sleep?
Yeah.
Zoo gorillas can live for 50 years
or more. That's a good question. The zoo gorillas may have a longer lifespan.
And Coco was a kind of a zoo gorilla, right?
Yeah. Pretty much all of her life.
Yeah. For all of her life.
Oh, that's a bummer.
It's a sad story.
It's a sad story. Yeah, Coco the gorilla, dead at the age of 46.
Yeah, I remember seeing a 60 Minutes report on her recently where, I mean, she could not only could she do sign language, but she was actually pressing buttons on a telephone and doing all kinds of other things that you would think that animals couldn't do. I mean, just an amazing creature.
Gorillas have a vocabulary of more than 1,000 signs.
Is that right?
And they understand 2,000 words of English.
This is what
she's
famous
texting?
For. Yeah, pretty much. Listen to this. She did a self. This is amazing. The twice featured on the cover of National Geographic, first in 1978, with a photo Coco had taken of herself in the mirror.
Oh, that's right. The selfie.
Yeah, she did a selfie in 1978.
And you just thought that was a Harry Kardashian. That was, in fact, Coco.
Coco.
A couple of minutes before 7, we're coming back with the news in a moment. And then General John Borling joins us in studio on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I hold it up and show my buddies like we ain't scared in our boots. Ain't muddy, but no one laughs. Cause there ain't nothing funny when a soldier cries. I just wipe my eyes. I fold it up and put it in my shirt. Pick up my gun and get back to work. And it keeps me driving on.
Love that song. It is an honor to welcome a friend in the studio. And he hates when I talk like this, but a bona fide American hero, General John Borling. Pat Brady is here as well, and he's a hero in his own right. We'll just figure out what that definition is later.
Nothing like the general.
General, nice to see you.
Well, it's good to be back with you, Steve. We cross flight paths often, but this first time, certainly in your new headquarters
here. What do you think?
Well, I think you need some window treatments. I don't know where I picked that up.
You're exactly right. There's a very important organization to you, and it's important to all of us. It's SOSAmerica.org. We're going to get into that in just a second. But for those not familiar, I know you don't like this. We've got to talk about you for a little bit. You spent, I believe, 6.5 years as a prisoner of war. Is that right?
I zigged one night. I should have zagged and got captured trying to hijack a truck. I was pretty much busted up physically and not in any place where there was any rescue. So, yeah, I got captured. I did hijack a truck, by the way.
Did you have a broken back, though, too?
Pardon me?
You had a broken back wing?
Yeah, well, a few things, you know, that were troublesome. And, no, I was survival instructor. I'd been through jump school, and there I was, you know, unable to walk. So the options are give up or try to do something rash. And so I did. I hijacked this truck in the middle of a road, so they had to run over me. Had to stop. But the truck was full of North Vietnamese regular troops.
So it was a military transport.
Yeah, this was a management decision I have reviewed a time or two.
I believe you told me at one point, and so began my extended stay in Vietnam.
You can put all kinds of fancy words on. You know, we tend to deal with adversity in life in a light way. I think I tell people that when you look back over your life and you see some stuff that's not as pleasing as it should be, it's okay to look back. Just don't stare. Just don't stare.
That's exactly
right. Go forward. Go
you
forward.
Know, you have your 55th anniversary tomorrow.
And 55th anniversary. Myrna, who was a high school sweetheart, and I were going to come into Chicago because I live in Rockford.
Yeah.
Moved from the south side after all the years in the military. We went back to Hyde Park, and then she's got a widowed sister. And as you guys know, I travel a bit on business.
A little bit.
And,
but she didn't, this is not staring, but she didn't know for 2 years. Is that
a bunch of years, almost three, that I was alive or not. So she hung in there. She said she could feel me, Pat. You've heard this story. What's really a good deal to team up with Pat here? Did you schedule this?
We can't get rid of him. I'll be honest with you.
When they need a ratings bump, they call me.
I mean, the name on the chair is not permanent.
No, that's a label maker.
I'm going to work on it. You know. I guess.
But congratulations on the anniversary.
Thank you. She's a great lady, and she's almost got me trained, and I think I gave up on trying to train her some years ago.
Yeah, you almost have cleared probation here.
Right.
6.5 years, and you had a remarkable career with way too many things to mention here, and I don't want to dwell on this, but there's a lot of people driving to work listening this morning who are fascinated by your story in the same way they're fascinated by Senator McCain and the
I live with John, as you know, mm-hmm. in Hanoi for a while. Later in the game, he was alone or then with other guys, but when there was some action toward the end, we got together. And he's you used the term hero before. I don't wear that mantle easily. I've stood in the shadow of some and been pleased to serve with some, and I would put John in that category.
How's he doing?
I think his physical condition is something that they're holding very close, but the glide path doesn't look all that promising. But he's a fighter, always has been, and is entertaining people at the House, talking over legacy kinds of issues,
sure.
We understand, and writing with colleagues. So I think that there'll be footprints, substantial footprints.
Biography on, did you see the documentary?
You know, I didn't.
Yeah, no. You're all over it when he's doing the concession speech in Phoenix.
We were there. And
there's a big shot of you when he's giving the speech.
Well, I think it's really a shot of my granddaughter who was cute, and they were shooting her, and, I photobombed the picture there.
Well, here's the thing, General. We live in a time where we all whine a little too much, in my opinion, and everybody's entitled to whatever their down moments are, obviously. But going through what you went through, what kept you going?
Boy, that's a question that comes, just rivet-like back into the gut. But it's pretty simple. You wanted to survive with honor. You wanted we wanted you guys to be proud of us when we came out. We're a bunch of fighter pilots, and we wanted to hang together, keep the faith, do the best we could under circumstances that have been well described as over the years as difficult,
brutal,
and
remember when
and so we tried to do that. We just wanted you to be proud of us. And in my case, when you're running, if you're a runner, a jogger, my speed currently is equivalent to a snail in a coma. I understand, but I'm out there moving and. But when you run an uncertain race, when you don't know how long you got to go,
sure.
That's the telling point. So in my case, so you try to use your mind, you try to keep your body as you can. We had that tap code. Are you familiar with the tap code?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so
invented a language.
It is, and I brought a copy of the book along. Yeah. The tap code's in there, so for some of your guys that maybe don't know it, the next time they get thrown in jail, they'll be able to.
Justin, make a note of it.
Say, there you go.
Justin, say hi to the general.
General, great to have you here. To think about what you just said, just the idea that you wanted us to be proud of you while you were in this heinous...
Not just me, all of us. I was with a company of unusual guys.
Yeah.
And we were alone or semi-isolation for many years, then they put us together in smaller, as a time went on, larger groups.
But as of right now, did Ken Burns' documentary, and it's 50 years...
I thought
years.
Ken Burns' documentary was a piece of crap.
Is that right?
There you go. I didn't even get...
I thought it was much too apologetic. I think it was much too wringing of your hands. I got the sense that he didn't even come close to being the kind of Ken Burns documentarian that I have seen in the past and respected. Didn't think that was a very good piece.
Well, for you, one of the things that mentioned in the documentary was just this discord between, of course, the young Americans and what they felt about the war at the time and the soldiers. For you to have the thought and the others that were in captivity to talk about this concept of wanting to make us proud and then come back and have many people not respect the soldiers and the people that were involved in the war, did that resonate with you?
That's an old and unfortunate story and an offshoot of when conflicts go long and are at least perceived to be indecisive. And there's a lot of revisionist history on both sides that you can come up with.
You won every battle, though, in that war.
Yeah.
And that's the fact that people don't.
I think that in reality, if you measure through long lens, Vietnam is probably our best ally in Southeast Asia today. If you've been back, as I have, after the war, you find out that there's this broad affection for Americans. such was not the case immediately following the war. And again, I think that the American population doesn't tolerate long, indecisive, expensive in terms of blood and treasure kinds of conflicts.
Did you feel that at the time? Did you feel the fact that it wasn't?
We were cut off pretty much. We got propaganda, but we didn't get hard news. For example, I was being hurt in 1970 along with a bunch of other guys the summer of 70. Tortured is the generic word, and they were doing that so you would break, so that you could go down and see a delegation and tell them how good you were being treated.
A little counterintuitive.
Yeah, a little counterintuitive. So anyway, so I was one of the. I never saw a delegation. Not that I was braver than anybody, just managed to last a little longer in these things. But I got loose and got to a desk where I was in this. They'd put you in different cells or rooms and they'd go to work on you. And they put me in this room with a desk in it. And I was able to scoot over there, get out of some of this stuff that they had me on. And it was full of letters. And I'd never had a letter. This is 1970. And I'd been down for 4 years. And I start going through all these letters. And I found one for a guy who was about three cells down that I could talk to him, you know, through the wall. And it was from his wife, divorcing him. And I never told him about that, but he got that letter, and I never said who it was. And about that time, they come back in the door, and they see I'm there, and they go crazy, and they're working on me, beating on me, and they're ripping this stuff out of my hands. And the last thing they rip out of my hands is an envelope, and there's a stamp on it. And it's a man of the moon. Look, I tell that story now. I get chills right now because of that. In about a week, 10 days later, when I got back in circulation, I tapped on the wall, "We own the moon." You have no idea what that did to from a morale standpoint. There was a big movement that day in Hanoi, and that message spread. Can I tell one more postscript of the story?
Sure.
Years later, I'm fortunate to be working at the White House as a White House fellow, and it's the morning meeting and in the Roosevelt Room, just steps from the Oval Office there on the West Wing. And across from me, it was Harrison Schmitt, Jack Schmitt, Apollo 17.
Yep.
And I tell him the story I just told you guys and your listeners. Well, he stands up and comes around the end of the table and he starts crying. And, you know, give me the manly hug thing. Well, I'm a tough, unfeeling guy, so hell, I started crying. And now the whole, you know, the guys are saying, "What's going on?" So now we had to tell the story. Now we got the whole Roosevelt Room. That afternoon, he gave me, and I have it, I should have done a show and tell for radio. He gave me a picture of him on the moon.
Wow.
With the flag, the American flag, and an Earthrise coming up over his shoulder and an inscription, "Glad we could help."
Oh, man.
Huh?
Oh, I mean, that is beautiful.
Amazing.
That is beautiful.
Well, in some measures, SOS America, Service Over Self America, that we're going to talk about eventually, is trying to help.
Very much so. And as a matter of fact, right after this break, we're going to come back and do that. Texters flying in with nothing but praise and compliments and thank yous to you, and somebody would like you to be president, and they'd like an executive order to get that done today.
I think they're in vogue today, aren't
they? Aren't they? Yeah. 7:20, more with General John Borling in just a second, and I want to tell you about SOS America, and we will, and he will.
The Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
We have a brand new truck for you, Chevy Silverado. Centennial Edition, the limited. So you're going to be driving down the road seeing this because it's a special edition, and I'd like you to have it. Now, we're going to give this sucker away eventually, but how do you win? You got to enter. Go to WGNradio.com/contest and enter there. And Justin, as you know, every morning at this time, we give away a little something as a bonus.
Right.
What do you got for them today?
Okay, so Jonathan Taves is 19, right? His number 19. Mm-hmm. So 9 plus 1 is 10. 10 mm-hmm. divided by 2 mm-hmm. is 5. Mm-hmm. And then you add the 4, that's 9. So the ninth caller right now
seems
is going to get the Blackhawks convention pack. One pack of 4 passes to the Blackhawks convention, the 11th annual Blackhawks convention at the Hilton Chicago, July 27th through the 29th. Get your convention passes and hotel guest rooms today. Book online at chicagoblackhawks.com. Ninth caller, 312-981-7200.
General John Borning's here. Pat Brady is here. And several people are asking about your book, Taps on the Walls, Poems from the Hanoi Hilton. As you said, keep your mind busy. You're a terrific, amazing poet, as a matter of fact. And Taps on the Walls, wherever you buy books, get 2 copies. You're careless, you lose one. Get a 3rd to give away.
Well, thanks for the push. I didn't realize we were going to be peddling with a pack here this morning. But, you know, the best way to do it is just come to jlbviking@yahoo.com. That's okay. My email, jlbviking@yahoo.com.
Wasn't that your call
sign? That was Viking. It was my old fighter pilot call sign, yeah. So Juliet Lima Bravo, jlbviking@yahoo.com, and we'll send one off to you.
Were you a writer before?
No, I wanted to clarify that the book was, you were talking about how to use time. We didn't have anything to write with, and so I started keep your mind busy. I started composing poetry and tapping it through the walls, and kept it memorized over all those years. And then when I left and got back to Clark after 6.5 years, got a cassette recorder. I didn't know what a cassette recorder was. I thought recorder or tape recorders had reels and tapes and things like that. So the guy gave me, a shoebox or something. But I started to download that stuff I've been carrying all those years. Download wasn't even a verb in 1973.
Sure.
And then buried the book for 40 years. And then John McCain agreed to do the forward for it, and so some guys in New York and the Pritzker Military Museum and Library here in town decided to make it the first imprint of the library.
It's tremendous.
So it's had a good run, and I know you've got a copy. I brought one along in case you don't, or maybe someone for your
staff.
Well,
I don't have a signed copy, actually.
I'd love to get it signed.
You know, I have the forged one, which I signed for you. Listen, I want to get into SOS America here and want to talk more about it. And I also got a couple other questions, obviously, to ask you. But SOS America, founded by you or co-founded by you?
Well, it's founded by me. Again, it goes back to the prison experience that a lot of us, in fact, all of us, said, hey, if we're fortunate enough to come out, you know, we had pessimists and optimists up there.
Okay.
Frankly, you know, the pessimists thought we were going to die up there and they wouldn't even send our bodies home. But the optimists thought they'd send our bodies home. So anyway, the gallows humor gets you through every time.
Yeah, I suppose it would.
Every time.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, we all said, look, if we make it, you know, and we're going to try to, each in our own way, to do something that makes a difference. And I ran into, because of the White House Fellows thing, John Gardner, deceased now, but a wonderful writer, thinker, former HEW guy, Independent Sector Common Cause. And he became my 4th great mentor, and he charged me, if you will, with doing something to paint in broad strokes to help renew America. That was his theme, renew America. And we talked a lot about that up in Hanoi, and people have done it different ways. John McCain, obviously, has done things. Other people have been very successful in business or in the military. And the notion was we needed to do some nation building in America.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of talk about diversity and divisiveness and all of that, but don't we really need to capitalize on shared experiences and shared values as a nation? And if you look at the most at-risk population, some would suggest it's young men, 18 to 26, coming out with that specter of all the responsibility that's going to come rolling down on their shoulders.
Sure.
And a lot of guys stub their toes, and there's no way to get that self-esteem factor going. So if we think the military is such a great institution, And it, by the way, the most favorably looked at institution in America.
Yep.
But only 3 or 4% of American men and women can qualify physically and mentally to be in the military.
Right.
Why don't we keep the all-volunteer force, but why don't we set up a program where there would be a year where you could come into the military if you could take care of yourself physically and mentally, where you'd be in a small unit, you'd stay in a small unit for a year. We'd mix the ages because you're different at 20 than you are at 18 than you are at 23 or 26.
Sure. Every 5 years is a half-life.
Yeah, absolutely. And you would perform tasks that were vital to the nation based upon the mission, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps.
Wherever we are in the world at that point.
Wherever we need to be. It'd be principally in the, not the shoot 'em up stage. You'd be in the support area.
Sure.
But you'd be doing important work. And this gives you that self-esteem factor that says, hey, I served. I took part. And it's something that, again, goes back to nation building in America. Well, we've been at this. We didn't have a lot of success in terms of getting fair hearing over the last few years. But it looks like there's a new climate now, and we're going to roll this thing out nationally. In fact, this is the announcement that we're going to roll this thing out nationally.
Fantastic.
And we're out trying to gain resources and to get the necessary thought leaders and the Congress, because it's going to take legislation. This is a very steep hill. But if we care about renewing America, if we care about us, then this is something we ought to look at.
None of us should be spectators. We should all be participants.
You got to be a participant.
The site is sosamerica.org.
Exactly.
sosamerica.org. You can join for free, or you can join for hundreds of thousands of dollars. How's that? You know, let's get those checkbooks cooking here.
And go to the phone. Operators are standing by. sosamerica.org. More with General John Borling coming up. Pat Brady here as well. That was Justin Kaufman. Dave's here. Pete's here. Look over there. Why, that's Mary Vandeveld standing by. And we'll get to the news in a second as well. Headline after this on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
His mother told him someday you will be a man, and you will be the leader of a big old band. Many people coming from miles around to hear you play your music when the sun go down. Maybe someday your name will be in lights and Johnny be good tonight.
It is 743. General John Borling here. 6.5 years as a POW, in phenomenal shape today, mentally and physically, with a wonderful attitude and a great spirit for America. And that really is the engine behind SOS America. Explore the nation, discover your purpose, as in yours and ours together, build friendships, increase America's potential, be enriched and respected, sosamerica.org. You know, we've never, in my lifetime, I don't think, we've never had a more positive view of those that serve. Maybe not the efforts that we make on behalf of whoever's in the White House, but we have respect for soldiers, men and women, like we haven't in any other time. That's a good thing. What about the state of the military?
You know, I think we've...
Why do I not hear you? Well, there we go. Okay.
I think we've been hollowed out over time. And I think we need to go through substantial rebuilding. We need to do it carefully, thoughtfully. I think we need to be very conscious of not wasting national treasure doing it. But aside from those mechanics, let me come back to just this, what I think is a feeling that runs, because that's what you're talking about, in the larger body politic of America. It's about knowing a guy, and maybe you know this guy. Maybe you are this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the guy that when he finds out you've been in the military, or he's talking to a military guy, says, gee, you know, I wish I'd spent some time in the military.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like, for young men anyway, they view it as a kind of rite of passage. Guys need to go out and, you know, take out some dragons from a self, notch their gun belts, do something that means something.
Well, the self-esteem you're talking
it's
about.
It's a self-esteem issue, and the fact that if you've served your country in some manner, this is affirming to you for a lifetime. You become a better husband, father, citizen. Remember, the women can volunteer for this program, but this is meant to be for the young men. Think about the people who go to college. You know what the numbers are for a person who enters college? Say 10 people enter college. After 6 years, not four, after 6 years, how many graduate, Pat?
40%?
40, that's very close. 4.5 out of 10 graduate. The rest of them fail along the way. And the question is, for men anyway, that's a big hit. I mean, all of a sudden you're a failure. Wouldn't it be nice to say, hey, I'm going to take my military service now? And it's kind of an like an escape road in Formula One. If you go into a turn too fast, you know, you got a way to do something else. And this is a way for us to have these shared experiences and shared value reaffirmation. And it's a renewal thing that every generation's got to go through. So,
well, you become part of the club. The club ought to be open to everybody that wants to help and is willing and able to help. And I remember as a kid, my dad, a World War II Army Air Corps guy, was probably never more at ease and never more comfortable than when he was with his guys talking about what they did.
That's why the small unit identity, that you'd come in, you'd have the ages and the geography of America mixed, and you would have that identity that could stay with you for a lifetime.
It's a great idea.
Yeah, so that's the, unless you're exempted. By the way, we should talk about who would be exempted.
Yeah, who would be?
If you're a firefighter or a policeman, mm-hmm. if you're trained to be a first responder, that you'd be exempted. If you're in the medical track, we don't want to screw that one up because that takes a many, many years of
understandable
of training, and they're going to be responsible citizens. If you're married, you know, marriage is
that a reason
you
to join?
Put up grown-up pants at that point. Yeah, well, you'll learn a lot is what you'll learn.
But the point being, you have a responsibility to a family at that point.
But there's got to be a need. But so sometime between 18 and 26, if there's a need, if there's demand, recognizing that federal agencies and state agencies could have a draw on this manpower or person power pool. Just imagine if we had 150,000 folks organized to go down and rebuild Puerto Rico, or to do something on the borders, or we mobilize armored units to do forest fires.
Right.
Why don't we have the kinds of resources? Or we need somebody to provide presence on the mean streets, provide role models in an organized fashion.
Up to this point, though, we've had volunteer services. There are like this, and there are some countries that make this mandatory. So the question I have is can you see this idea of service being mandatory? Not, I don't want to say the word draft.
We are going to be advocating legislation, because the volunteer business only gets you so far.
Yep.
And you find out, and I had a talk with Stan McChrystal, who's been very active with this, and he too was concerned about the mandatory thing. But in truth, the volunteer business, it tends to be, you don't get the segments that you'd like to get them mixed up. Lots of middle class, upper class, white women volunteer for causes, but we're trying to reach a broad spectrum of the American society.
Well, yeah, it's a win-win, because you take that 18 to 26 demographic, you make them feel good about themselves, you rocket propel them into whatever career they're choosing or whatever path they're choosing, as opposed to spinning out of control and not knowing where they're going.
Well, it's an option that they choose the year. It's not that, hey, this is it. I mean, you pick it unless you're otherwise exempted. So there's element is voluntary.
Well, presidents in the past have floated this. Clinton had the, I forgot the name of it, AmeriCorps.
Well, there's AmeriCorps, there's Points of Light. You know, those things are now billion-dollar line items in the budget. That's our volunteer programs, and we shouldn't do it that way.
But that's my point. My point being, is it time to rethink how we do service in this country? Because beyond military, and this is a different conversation than military, but the idea of how service plays out to American citizens, and if it's, I've had this conversation before on WGN about, should we make volunteering mandatory? This idea that if it was part of some sort of service that you had to give back to your country, whether that was picking up garbage in the park on the south side or going to rebuild Puerto Rico, that it was part of the deal to be an American citizen.
The phrase is freedom and responsibility, liberty and duty. That's the deal if you're an American. But what I don't want to see is something where there would be an avenue where the privileged few could go down and work at the old people's home and everybody else is out, you know, helping to rebuild Puerto Rico or guard the borders or whatever it is. I think we need to be, I think there needs to be an egalitarian, an equality, if you will, in terms of, hey, this is paying dues. This is paying dues.
And my last question for you, and Stephen could jump in, but I'm interested in how politically you can get that through, because the idea of anything mandatory would scare off any congressman or senator who's like afraid that it might be a backlash.
Well, we've got a lack of courage in Congress like I've never seen.
They're afraid that people say, oh, you're going to sign me up for something? I'll vote for somebody else.
Why would you ever hire anyone into a job of a guy who's afraid he's going to lose it, you know, or he wants to keep it for a lifetime?
Amen.
You know, we need people to stand up and do things that ensure that they don't have a political future, that they do things that are right by the country. And we're arguing that this renewal mechanism, it's going to take a lot of persuasion. It's going to take a lot of leadership is, at the end of the day, example and persuasion. And we're going to garner the resources and create a nationwide movement. This is our aim, in order to put the kind of political pressure on. And there's people out there. We've had draft legislation in the Congress previously.
Sure.
But it's died in committee, limp-legged. Right. And you're right. The problem has been, gee, nobody wants it and we can't afford it. As a practical matter, this makes money for the country.
Yes. And this texter, I think, sums up your message well. And I know it's a message you've heard before. My son joined the Army against our wishes. I sincerely believe it's the best thing he's ever done. He has a confidence and focus I never thought possible for him. That's what you're talking about.
That's the message. Gee, I knew a guy. Yeah. And there's a guy.
Right, there's the guy. More with you in a second. General Borling is here. Taps on the Wall is the book. But more importantly than all of this is SOSAmerica.org. Please check it out. We'll come back in just a second and grab our last few minutes. We're only scratching the surface here. The general is going to get a cot in the back, and we're going to keep him around so he pops up every morning.
Steve Cochran,
will you please report to the radio booth?
It's Steve Cochran from the Allstate Skyline Studio
on 720 WGN.
Pat Brady's here. Rick Abelstein will rejoin us next week, by the way. Dean, after the news coming up here in just a few minutes, a few more minutes of this visit with General John Borling. Pat?
General, how do we help with SOS? Just people like me. What can we do?
In other words, old guys like us. Yeah. What can we do?
Well, okay, so you're not in danger of being recruited to the primary force. But, boy, can you be helpful from the standpoint of spreading the word and going to www.sosamerica.org and joining. Again, you can join for free, or you can join for a few pennies a day, or you can join for a lot of money. And help us proselytize, help us grow this movement so that we can demonstrate the necessary civic dynamic that will make the politicians take note.
And I understand there's Borling 2020 campaign anywhere.
Yeah, just started right here wasn't aware of it.
You know, I frolicked with political offices, you guys know, and found out that I was a much better fighter pilot than I was a politician.
Yeah, you actually did pretty well.
Yeah, you did. And it's not a friendly territory at this point, but we need more of you. Let me ask you a question before we run out of time here. I think about the young men and women and the parents and the grandparents of the young men and women who are listening now or considering a military career. You, Senator McCain, others who served as POWs for a good portion of your careers, certainly have a right to be bitter. And have a right to go in the other direction.
Bitterness never figures. Boy, how do you build something positive on a negative foundation?
I understand. But my point being, what do you say to kids today who are considering the military? What's the message?
Well, the first message is you got to make yourself physically and mentally straight and competitive to get in. It's tough. And the numbers are finite because it's a very expensive force, the all-volunteer force. SOS America is meant to provide that pool of person power that gives us enabling power as a nation. It's about nation building in America. You know, I'm all for going helping out overseas and doing all of that business that we do with great compassion and great concern. Although I must tell you, I do believe we need to put America in the first position. I care a lot about my country and my fellow citizens, and spent 37 years in the military, and try to continue to march now to advance the American cause. And
shouldn't
I think
we be
this
able
is something we need.
Shouldn't we be able to do both with the right leadership?
You would think so.
Yeah, maintain our place in the world, but also, first and foremost, take care of home.
It's always a balancing act, but in the end, what we do domestically drives what we do internationally.
Later today, Pat Brady and I are going to be speaking to a group of Blue Cross and Blue Shield folks, and one of the things we're going to be talking about is the idea that you can be a Democrat, you can be a Republican, but you can actually get along and argue for the right reasons and come to a solution. Are you optimistic about that in a time where everybody just wants to scream how they're right?
I am hopeful that these acerbic feelings will attenuate over time. But if you look at the history of American politics, that may be overly optimistic. In the end, we've got to demand as a people that the people we put into office, be it federal, state, or local, do business. Do the business that we hired them to do,
exactly.
Which means talking back and forth with mutual respect and mutual regard. But there seems to be this divisive nature going on. Either the state has to take care of everybody, or it all has to be thrown back on the individual. And it's obviously a balance. And it's that centrist approach that you're talking to, I think, Steve.
And absolutely.
Pat, I know it's that central thing where we need to exchange ideas, try to come up with the best approach. Life is a series of approximations.
I mean, could you imagine if you had gone to war and thought, I'm only going to fight for guys who are eventually going to be bald? I mean, you know, come on. It's not how it works. You fight for America, you serve America, and that means everybody. Pat, quickie.
What's it like to fly an F-15?
The most fun you can have with your clothes on.
Taps on the Wall, an amazing book, a collection of poetry, literally crafted and memorized while he served as a POW at the Hanoi Hilton. It's an amazing book, and I hope you get it. And I certainly hope you support SOSAmerica.org and always. By the way, best way to get the book, JLBViking@Yahoo.com. General, I know we'll do this again, and you know you're welcome here anytime.
Steve, you're very generous. Thank you, all you guys. Pat, great to team up with you again and all your staff here, Steve. What a class act. Yeah. Glad to see you up here in your eagle's nest.
Yes, sir. That's exactly what it is. Is it news time now, or we got a quick break? What are we doing? Quick break. We're back with the news on 720 WGN.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you...
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, hi. You know I love you more than when I should. Yeah.
Dean Richards live at Channel 9. Good morning, Dean.
Actually, he's over here. Good morning, Dean.
Another flawless beginning of our little segment.
I'm on entertainment. I'm still getting lost in this suite of offices.
Oh, I need to. I've had those chips that they put in dogs.
Yeah.
I've had one of those put in me, so when I get lost in the office, I can easily be found.
I'm not kidding. I tell you this. I'm looking out the window of the studio here, back towards the office. I just realized that's our office.
Yeah.
Like right there, that the long table, that's right outside my office.
I don't have a chip, Dean. I have an electric fence.
That's how you learn where to go.
We just spent an hour with General John Borling, just an amazing man. And Dave, I thought you made a great point off the air. How did you sum that up?
Well, I said it's like having the best kit of the week of all time times 100 in here, and the feeling you're left with that your life has been an abject failure.
We've just been riding piggyback all these years.
He spent the night at my house last night.
What?
You're going to need to explain that.
What? No, I think that explains it. I think it sums it up.
The general lives in Rockford, and he was he had a golf outing yesterday that is right by my house, and I knew he was coming downtown, so I had offered, Pat and I offered to have him stay with us, and so he did.
And you offered, then you told Pat.
Exactly. Yes. That is exactly it. He enjoyed some gin and shortbread cookies.
Just like Mom used to make.
When he was asking me, he was telling me a little bit about his Southside beginnings and then, you know, going into the academy and things like that, and then he said, well, how'd you get into radio? And I was so embarrassed because radio seems very low level.
Hey, Hey, now, don't ever be embarrassed.
I know.
He was a POW for 6.5 years.
I was like, well, I grew up listening
flew
to
fighter jets.
He memorized his poems.
And turned
and
it into a book?
Translated them years later. So, yeah, tell us about your radio
he
story.
He read he from
you
memory.
You produce Moron Entertainment. I know. You should feel good.
He gave me one of his poetry books, and he signed it to Pat and I for our anniversary, which is August 12th. And he said, you know, I think that you'll like this one. Page 75. I mean, he wasn't looking at the book. And then he said it to me on the couch. And
wow.
And he was getting choked up, and I thought, this isn't a crap. I wish I could be filming this, you know, him on my couch, getting to talk about
the whole thing sounds slightly wrong to me.
I know, it sounds bad.
And you thought it was just going to be a night of celebrity family feud and going to bed before 9 o'clock.
What does a general wear to go to bed? Was he, like, you know, wearing, like, general pajamas or
so general jammies?
I didn't see him in his pajamas, but it's funny that you mentioned that, Dean, because I didn't know what I should be wearing when he got there.
Right.
Because Pat was at work, and I had gone for a run, and so I took a shower, and typically he got to my house around 7:30. I would just put pajamas on, but my sister and I decided pajamas weren't appropriate.
Yeah.
So then
first time meeting.
But I'm not going to get dressed and put
makeup on. I thought cocktail gown. I suggested ball gown.
I know. So I had wet hair, but I had
comes,
like a
comes
sweater.
Comes to the door and it was just with a towel on. Hi, General.
No, it wasn't quite like that. But
you four-star rascal, you.
I will say this, Dean, and Dave, you know this. After 8 o'clock, I greet all my guests in lingerie.
Yes. That's always. Yes. I always enjoy going to your house late.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
It's like going to Hef's, the Playboy.
Yeah, right. The smoking jacket.
But
yeah.
he sat on the couch in his shoes and suit. He had a suit on when he came.
Of course.
He didn't take his shoes off.
He is a walking, talking monument. He is.
Was that trouble for you? Not
a living statue.
It's not that I mind shoes. I personally cannot sit on a couch wearing shoes. It is very uncomfortable to me. I don't like it.
You know, I didn't think about this. Did he violate any of the Sandberg rules at your house?
No, but he sat in Pat's spot on the couch. So it was it was very familiar setting because he sat in Pat's spot.
But how about the OCD alarms going off in your head?
You know what? He and I, right away when he sat down, he did my Myers-Briggs personality profile. He knew right away what, and I've taken that before, and he was dead on. And he and I have the same one. Only 14% of the population have it, he told me. And so that's why we were clicking, he said. And so he has just as many OCD. He falls right in line with all of my rules. So.
You know what that comes down to? Sandberg would have been a great general.
That's what I'm thinking. What Instead, I went into radio.
That's the takeaway.
Yeah. She's kind of our general.
She yes, that is. You know, that's a good point.
Say, right? We understand the detention when she comes by. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Star Wars, Pete Davidson, Janet Jackson, and a new subscription service for your movies. What? All coming up. Stand by for that. 818. This sponsored by Brand New Smile Dental Implant Center. More on entertainment.
We'll be calling his name. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 9 and 720.
Back to Dean. This is Moron Entertainment. Moron Entertainment, sponsored by Brand New Smile Dental Implant Center.
You look nice today, Steve.
Thank you.
I was just looking at a video here of your interview with Major General John Borling on Facebook. All the kids love. You got dressed up.
I mentioned this earlier. I don't know if it's a testament that I'm old or it's early. I looked up and I went, who's the bald guy in the red shirt? Turns out it's me.
That looks nice.
I almost wore the same shirt today, Dean. No fooling.
We got to quit going to Untuck It together.
Well, then one of you
you get one, then I'll get one.
That should be the way we do it from here on out.
I did notice that
staff unis.
In the video that you shot, an inordinate amount of time was spent on the building across the way from us. The window that we were looking in the other day?
Yes, only for their safety. Yes,
that's already exactly played out, Dean. No one cares anymore. We've moved on from that 3 days.
Good cover.
Yeah.
In that David Letterman show that he does, My Next Guest or whatever, he had...
My Next Guest needs no introduction.
Jerry Seinfeld on, and they were talking about Untuck It and how the guy that invented it, how they have a real problem with his life goal was to find the right shirt length to be able to wear it untucked. And then Jerry says, because the real problem is you're 12 pounds overweight, and so you don't want to tuck in your shirt. And they're dying laughing. They're both very thin, so it's extra funny, you know.
It's only funny to those two.
I know, it made me laugh.
All right, let's go through this now. Star Wars spinoffs, what's happening?
You know, the Solo spinoff movie did not do well at the box office at all. As a result of that, yesterday Lucasfilms announced they're going to put these spinoff films on hold for a while. There was supposed to be an Obi-Wan movie, a Boba Fett movie. But they say for now, they think they're spreading it out a little too thin. They want to concentrate on the main films. Next one will be Star Wars Episode 9 that'll come out in December. But, you know, for those of us really looking forward to learning more about Boba Fett, this is devastating news.
Well, I enjoyed the Solo movie as a Star Wars fan, and I will say they messed it up because they were doing 1 year on off and in December, so the Rogue One movie came out in December, then it was the Star Wars movie. They switched it up and did it 4 months after the last Star Wars movie, Here Comes the Solo movie.
So too much.
So it's just too quick. So for them to put them on hold is kind of annoying.
So basically,
I think it was too quick. But also, I don't think I like the Solo film as much as you did. Yeah. That,
but it's the old show business cliche: leave them wanting less, which is what they did.
Yeah, right.
They created movies
that's
quickly.
What they're going to get.
And is it Ron Howard that screwed this up?
I don't think Ron Howard screwed it up. I think it was just that for me, it was the writing in this film that was not. Of Star Wars caliber. To me, there was no oh wow moment in this movie, or any moment like normally in a Star Wars movie where your mind is blown by something innovative that they've done. I think he played it too safe, but it was mostly a script problem.
Janet Jackson news?
She revealed in an interview in Essence magazine that...
I'm on the cover again.
In their 30s. Steve looks beautiful in a tropical setting. I don't care what anybody says.
It's all about lighting.
That in in her 30s, she suffered severe depression and revealed that. And she says it was low self-esteem and feelings of inferiority that caused it all. And she said it was tenacious and scary, but she's doing much better now, and that the source of her happiness is her little baby boy.
You think about that in regards to Robin Williams and Anthony Bourdain and Kate Spade, you know, who all tragically took their lives. Thankfully, Janet Jackson got whatever help she needed.
Right.
Again, depression doesn't care how rich you are, how pretty you are, how much money you have, how much famous you are, and none of that.
Yeah, I screened a movie yesterday, a new documentary that's coming out in a couple of weeks about Whitney Houston.
Yep.
And, you know, talk about somebody, much like Janet Jackson, somebody who had every single thing in the world that most people wish they could possibly have. You couldn't imagine them possibly being unhappy in any way. Janet Jackson revealing this about her life. But what an unbelievable tragedy we are reminded of the life of, you know, maybe one of the greatest singers of all time, Whitney Houston.
You gotta wonder, I've always wondered, though, how much of an influence was Bobby Brown on that bad path?
Significant. Very significant, according to this movie. It reveals things that I had never known about Whitney Houston before, and I thought... Not that I'm a know-it-all about it, but I've covered all of it. I thought I saw every piece of footage that could be seen or knew every fact that could be seen. There are new things that we learn in this movie about, you know, how she was very easily influenced by Bobby Brown. And this movie sure makes it look like he was a major contributing factor to her demise.
And as we were saying, Janet Jackson coming off the Rhythm Nation stuff in the early 90s, the mid-90s, the 90s should have been great for her.
That's right, Mr. Cochran, if you're nasty.
That's what a lot of people say. I have to subscribe now to go to the movies?
You don't have to. You save a lot of money if you go to a lot of movies. They have this new subscription service that's called MoviePass, where you pay $10 a month, and you can go to X number of movies per month. Certain screenings, certain theaters. AMC yesterday announced a similar subscription package. Theirs is $19.95 a month, and you can go to 3 movies a week. You can go to IMAX screenings. You can go to 3D screenings. It's sort of unlimited with all the kinds of theaters that AMC has. It's a pretty good deal. I mean, if you go to see a lot of movies, 3 movies a week is a lot. But if you you know, if you're a moviegoer, this is a fantastic deal.
Sounds like it. We don't have time to play the sound, so tell me the Pete Davidson news.
Pete Davidson was on Jimmy Fallon last night, officially confirmed that he and Ariana Grande are engaged.
As one does, they go on the talk shows.
That's what you do. If you don't have time to tweet or Instagram, that's what you do. You go on old-fashioned television and announce it. Talks about how people have been reacting to him, like dudes on the street that are like tipping their hats to him, like, dude, way to go. You know, you give me hope.
You're so above your skis. You could do this.
Also, TMZ is reporting that Pete and Ariana moved into a new apartment in Manhattan's Chelsea neighborhood, Steve. A $16 million condo.
Wow.
He ain't making that on Saturday Night Live, kids.
No.
I can tell you that right now.
Well, you know the old saying, first comes marriage, next comes the album, and then the in-store appearance. And then
is that the old
second
saying?
Album. That's the old saying.
I didn't know that.
Sitting in a tree. K-I-S-S-I-N-G.
That's what it ends with. Yeah. Thanks, buddy.
See ya.
That's Dean. We're back with the headlines. And then an amazing guest coming up in a few minutes in regards to being separated from your child. Stand by. We'll explain. First at 8:30. Headlines next, 720 WGN.
Back with more shenanigans on the Steve Cochran Show.
Our country is respected again all over the world.
Brother, please.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio on 720 WGN.
Brother, please. Walter E. Smith after 9. They're going to redecorate my office. And Chicago White Sox legend Ron Kittle after 9:30.
How about that?
Very amazing. Very amazing. Very cool.
I really, memories been flooded back. I don't know why, but I was just like, really quick, could give you the stats of Ron Kittle in 1983. I believe, and I have to ask him, 35 homers, 100 RBIs.
Definitely geek out on him.
I'm already
geeking. You're going to baseball geek on him.
I know.
Yesterday, the president did a ceremony and an executive order. Didn't need either. Could have picked up the phone and put an end to the outrage of taking children away from their parents. But that is not the full story. And Justin, we have an amazing guest in studio.
Yeah.
Explain what's going on.
Well, missing from today's national conversation is that first person account. The people, the human beings that are making the choice to cross the U.S. border with fear of uncertainty about how they and their families will be treated. Our next guest, Anna, is that person. Anna, and we're withholding her last name, is from El Salvador. And after her husband, a shopkeeper, was murdered by the MS-13 gang, she made the choice to take her family and flee. She brought her two sons and one daughter to the U.S. border to apply for asylum. This was 2015. After the ICE interviews and vetting process, Anna and her two sons were given asylum. But her daughter, Jessica, then 19, was not. In that time, Jessica was back in El Salvador, and she was terrorized, sexually assaulted, and her life threatened by the same now legendary MS-13. So Jessica tried again. She tried to reunite with her family by crossing the border illegally. She was apprehended and charged with a felony for reentry. She's currently fighting deportation in a Texas detention facility. Advocates and lawmakers have gone public with her case, providing evidence that she should be given asylum. Her case is right now in court. Anna has not seen her daughter, Jessica, since being separated over 3 years ago. Anna lives in Evanston with her sons at the Lake Street Church, which is part of the Sanctuary Network here in the Midwest. In studio with me this morning, Shanti Elliott, an educator who leads the Sanctuary and Asylum Initiative at the Lake Street Church in Evanston, and Anna, the Salvadoran mother of Jessica. She doesn't speak English. She's Spanish-speaking. So with us today, translator Sally Branch. There's a rally today to raise awareness for Jessica's story. It's at Federal Plaza in Chicago at 12 noon. Shanti, Anna, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Yes, thanks for being here. And your story, pardon me, your story is a very important one to tell. I want to make sure people know this rally today is rain or shine, I assume?
It is, yes.
Okay, and what do we hope to achieve from the rally?
The rally is at noon in Federal Plaza, right outside of the senator's office. And we really need senators to intervene with ICE and demand Jessica's release. She has been detained for 2 years after being brutally traumatized, and she needs to be released on an order of supervision, which is what her family is also on. The family does not currently have asylum. They're in the asylum-seeking process.
Got it.
The rally is to support Jessica. She needs to be out of jail. She needs to be reunited with her family. We want our senators to intervene.
Durbin and Duckworth.
Yeah, and the advocates and the lawyers and even the lawmakers in this case, they all point to that it's pretty obvious that the evidence collected for this case, for Jessica's case, says that she should be granted status for refugee status or asylum. Why is that not happening?
I'll keep going. Sure. I know that Anna is really the focus here, but I'll tell a little bit more about the legal status. We honestly don't know. She should have been released with her family 3 years ago. She should have been allowed to enter into the asylum process. When she was deported, she was separated from her family in detention. She was deported. The rest of the family was sent here to Chicago to apply for asylum. She was deported, and she could not live in safety there in El Salvador.
So do we know, and let me address this to you, Anna, do you know as a mom, even though you haven't been able to have contact with your daughter, do you know that she's okay, generally speaking, okay?
No has tenido contacto, ¿no? Con Jessica. Pero la pregunta es que, ¿cómo está ella? ¿Tú sabes cómo sigue ella?
Pues, mi hija no está nada bien.
My daughter's not well.
Mi hija está en una detención que es inhumana.
She's in a detention center that's inhumane.
Jessica lleva casi 2 años en esa detención.
She's had 2 years. She's been there for 2 years in detention.
Y yo estoy acá pidiendo que hagan algo por mi hija, por la libertad de mi hija.
And I'm here asking that they free my daughter.
It's got to be absolutely heartbreaking. And Anna, we have a time problem here as well, because as I understand it, your daughter Jessica is in the Texas court system, and there's a concern that time could run out before asylum is granted, or at least she's given a fair opportunity at that.
Cosas que sabemos que no tenemos mucho tiempo porque ella está en el proceso allá y hay la posibilidad que no le van a dejarla salir y tenemos que hacer todo lo que es posible de ayudarla.
While she's translating, I'm just going to say she could be deported at any time.
That's why contacting Duckworth and Durbin is so important.
Anxious. We don't know when they will deport her. They have almost deported her multiple times. If she's deported...
Pues, yo necesito ayuda pronto.
I need help soon.
Porque mi hija está a punto de ser deportada.
Because she's at the point of being deported.
Y yo estoy pidiendo ayuda a las personas importantes.
And I'm asking for help from the people who
sí,
are powerful.
Si el señor senador Durbin pudiese hacer algo por mi hija.
I'm hoping Senator Durbin can do something for my daughter.
Quisiera que se pusieran en el lugar de mí. He sufrido tanto por mi hija.
I'd like them to put themselves in my position. I have suffered so much for my daughter.
Mi hija no puede ser enviada al Salvador.
She can't go back to Salvador.
Mi hija es perseguida por grupos criminales.
She is being sought after. Persecuted by criminals. They want to persecute her more so.
Jessica no puede volver a El Salvador. Ella, si ella regresa, me la matan en el país.
She can't go back to El Salvador because they'll kill her in her country.
So this is vitally important that not just the rally today is successful, but that you all understand, picking up your phone or putting an email in immediately to Senators Durbin and Duckworth to say, you want this situation to be resolved the best way possible. And by the way, Justin, this show just goes to show, this isn't about politics. You time this out. That started under President Obama. It goes on now under President Trump. And with the involvement of ICE under the direction of the White House, you hear a story like this and you see what happened this week with these babies, all the way to little kids to preteens. I don't care who's in the White House. Where's the humanity?
Right. Well, we'll continue the conversation. Shanti Elliott and Anna are here, as well as translator Sally Branch. Let's do this. Let's get an update on what's coming up with the news and get an update on the roads, and we'll come back. Continue the conversation here on Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Again, there is a Chicago Interfaith Leaders Rally to free Yessica from ICE detention this afternoon, Federal Plaza at 12 noon. In the short time we have left, yeah, we want to encourage you again to contact Senator Durbin and Duckworth offices and say, please help immediately, because the time is running out here. Justin.
In studio with us, Anna, we're withholding her last name, but she's a Salvadoran mother who brought her family here seeking asylum after her husband and the kid's father was murdered by a gang. He was a shopkeeper in El Salvador after a dispute that involved Yessica. They came here. Two of the sons were allowed to seek asylum with the mother. Yessica was deported. She came back, is now being charged for a felony for reentry. She's in a Texas facility. That's what the backdrop on the story. This week, Anna, has been one that these stories have come to light, that we have seen more and more in the public, these stories of family separations. How difficult is it for you to relive your experience?
¿Cuánta dificultad está teniendo ahora oyendo todo lo que están hablando en los radios, en televisión, sobre la separación de los niños de las familias? ¿Cómo te sientes recordando todo que ha pasado?
Pues para mí es difícil. Yo he sufrido mucho y sigo sufriendo por mi hija.
It's been very difficult because I continue to suffer, and I've been suffering for my daughter.
Es un dolor comparado con nada.
There's no comparison as to the pain that I'm feeling.
En mi persona, yo y mis dos hijos hemos sufrido por Jessica día tras día.
Myself and my children have been suffering and thinking about Jessica every single day, missing her so much.
No tenemos vida, no tenemos paz.
We don't have a life, we don't have peace.
Al saber que mi hija está sufriendo.
Knowing that my daughter is suffering.
Y saber que no sé qué va a pasar con ella.
And not know what's going to happen.
Y creo que ese dolor que yo siento tan grande por mi hija, lo están sintiendo muchísimas familias más.
And I believe that the pain that I am feeling for my daughter is the pain that so many other families are feeling right now.
Shanti, I want to bring you in because there are several people, many people in Chicago that are seeking asylum. We had Chuck Todd on earlier talking about a lot of what's happening at the border has to do with a lack of a policy in Latin America. A lot of the countries there are suffering the same situation that Anna's talking about with fleeing from gangs and corruption, violence, things of that nature. There are a lot of families in Chicago seeking sanctuary?
Not seeking sanctuary per se, but seeking asylum, yes, and many, 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 many people who have lived here for many years, who have been great contributors to their communities, but have not received documentation, even though they've applied year after year after year for documentation. So we have, yes, there are large numbers of asylum seekers and large numbers of undocumented immigrants. And our policies have been wrenching families who are very committed to this country, to their communities, who contribute just immeasurably to our communities.
And that is why, as a resource, we are missing the boat dramatically, because these wonderful people that come in, the people that built this country, your ancestors, your grandparents, your great-grandparents, that's what we're talking about, the next generation of great Americans. And the other thing I wanted you to address, Shanti, if you could, it's been very frustrating for me to hear that this is some game refugees are running to get into the great United States, and they know what they're getting into. Could you talk for a second about the process that it takes to risk their lives to come from South America across Mexico and have these coyotes take their money, to be abused the way so many of them have? How are we to know that they know what a port of asylum is, which port they're supposed to go to, and have been told the truth about anything?
When people are fleeing for their lives and for the lives of their children, they are going to flee and get to a place of safety. And the families who have come here are suffering tremendous trials along the way, and taking those risks for the lives of their families. They're trying to get away from the gangs. These are people who are trying to resist the gangs and do things in a different way in their countries, and they get killed for it, and their children get killed for it. So of course they have to flee. And no, they don't know what the process is going to be. They want safety, and the United States does have a reputation, a long history of immigration. As you said, we are a nation of immigrants. We are founded on immigrants, by immigrants. And to shut the doors like this is so anti-American.
Last word for Anna. This experience with being separated from your daughter, who now you haven't seen for 3 years, are you optimistic that you will see your daughter soon?
Bueno, hace mucho tiempo que ha estado separado de su hija. ¿Qué piensas tú? ¿Te sientes que tienes esperanza? ¿Tienes piensas que ella se va a ser libre, que le van a dar libertad? ¿Te sientes más bien positiva de eso?
Sí, me siento positiva y con seguridad. Por eso estoy acá.
Yes, I believe it will happen. I feel safe about it, sure about it.
Haciendo un llamado.
It's a calling.
Para que dejen en libertad a mi hija.
It's a calling from me to them to free my daughter.
Ha sido difícil para mí y seguirá siendo difícil hasta que mi hija me la dejen en libertad, pero que sea para este país.
It's been very difficult for me, and it's going to continue to be difficult for me until they do give her freedom to stay here in the United States.
Jessica no tiene a nadie en El Salvador.
Jessica doesn't have anyone in El Salvador.
No más lo que me le espera es la muerte a mi hija.
Only to wait for death to be killed.
I can't begin to tell you how amazing you are as a mom, and the great work you guys are doing through the church as well. Your courage is incredible, and we're going to say prayers for you and just hope for the best and ask the senators Durbin and Duckworth to hear these pleas and step up.
The rally today for Jessica at Federal Plaza in Chicago at 12 noon. Shanti Elliott is the Sanctuary and Asylum Initiative, leads the Sanctuary and Asylum Initiative at Lake Street Church in Evanston. And Anna is the Salvadoran mother of Jessica, who is in a Texas detention facility waiting deportation. Thanks for joining us, you guys. Really appreciate it.
Dave, we'll take care of the news here. We'll say hi to everybody at CLTV and get into the 9 o'clock hour next. And obviously, this is not the last bit of this discussion we will continue to have. But nothing but the best to everything you're trying to achieve, Shanti.
Thank you for having us.
From our brand new home,
we're about to witness the greatest miracle of the machine age.
The Allstate Skyline Studio.
Do you hear me? We got to risk a full power start.
The Steve Cochran Show.
On 720 WGN.
All right, 9:13. We head into hour number four on CLTV and 720 WGN. You know, when I'm not here on the radio, I don't know how many of you guys know this, I'm an interior decorator.
And I knew that.
Heard. And that's why, Sandberg, you should probably take this segment away from me and do it from here.
I saw the billboards on the Kennedy.
Right.
With your face all over.
Steve style.
Steve style.
We have Katie and Maureen Smith with an E from Walter E. Smith.
Good morning.
Good morning. Half of the four Smith women.
Yes.
Yeah, running the company, and it's about time. Good for you two.
Thank you. Thank you.
I noticed I didn't give the other two sisters as much credit as I gave you two.
We showed up here in a monsoon,
you
so
really
we deserve
did.
A little extra credit, right?
Well, you both look fabulous. And by the way, you know, we talk about it in the commercial about regardless of your budget, you get a designer. Katie's actually working on stuff at my house.
I am.
So I think it's a perfect challenge to take on my office here at work.
Oh, yeah. If anybody doesn't know, Steve has a lovely golf-themed office.
Let's say had.
I had, actually, because yes. Maureen sent me a picture of your the wall that your niece did,
yes,
that she painted, which is,
yes,
beautiful, and it's a big update from the golf wallpaper.
I can't believe,
literally,
you're judging my golf office.
Is your house all
golf?
There
was golf wallpaper and a golf border.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my, I did not
that
know
opens
that.
You up to all sorts of judgment.
You know what? We had other stuff to talk about, but I just want to talk about what Steve's house is like, what his office is
I'm going
like.
To need a photo.
Oh, she likes, yeah, she likes the rest of the
house.
The
rest of the house is lovely. The rest of the house, I think, is all Maureen, but the office was like the one untouched place that Steve,
went all
where
golf.
Steve could be Steve.
Where I could almost, where I almost ruined it, but it's still salvageable. Well, before we get into this, in talking about what's going on here, you know, and I mention this all the time, the stuff I talk about on the air, I spend my money on it because I believe in it, and I believe, and I said this to you guys at the meeting that we had initially, I think Walter E. Smith and WGN have a lot in common. I mean, they're both Chicago institutions.
Exactly, exactly. And that's what we love. We love our Chicago connection, and we love that people remember us, remember all the wacky commercials, and it's kind of just part of like the local lore.
And the trucks, in a way. Trucks,
the big brown trucks. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But back it up to the beginning. Grandpa started this?
Great-grandpa.
Great-grandpa started this.
We are the first of the fourth generation to come on board. So our great-grandpa started it after World War II. He knew that vets were returning home, getting married, starting families. So it started over on like Belmont area.
Okay.
As a pretty much an appliance store, and they sold kitchen, dining sets, things like that. And over the years, I mean, that was 75 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Things have changed and
but these
evolved.
Are GIs coming home. Yep, the GI
exactly.
Bill.
Exactly. Yeah. And we're a proud military family. Our grandpa was in the Army. My husband was in the Army. So it means a lot to know that we served that group of Chicagoans so many years ago.
So how do you go from selling Maytag washers and dryers to eventually selling the fabulous furniture?
Well, I think a lot of it just has to do with changing tastes and changing needs. You know, these days, everybody's using Instagram and Pinterest to get inspiration.
Yep.
So we're constantly having to up our game and constantly looking for new sources. And, you know, my grandpa prides himself on bringing custom furniture to the Chicago area. So he was really a pioneer in that, in letting people come into our store, look through thousands of fabrics and pick exactly what they wanted. Yeah. Until he did that, it was really unheard of. So we kind of took his lead and inspiration, and we've just been running with it ever since.
And I think you said when we met with you before that the showrooms are set up by similar to those Instagram and Pinterest pictures.
Absolutely.
So if you're looking for a style, you can take you to an area where you see the actual furniture.
And we design the showrooms to lifestyles or to particular tastes. So we are really proud of the fact that we have something for everybody. A lot of our competition is kind of one note, and we can replicate anything our competition does and then some. So
sure.
Whether you're traditional, which is what I think a lot of people associate us with, to modern or somewhere in between, we really do have it. And that's a constant challenge for us to fill everybody's needs. Yeah.
Now, I want to get from great-grandpa to grandpa. Does he still have the car from the commercial, that classic car?
He does not. I think it just got to be a little bit more than he could handle.
Right, cracked it
repairs.
Up. Driving too fast.
No, he didn't do that.
He scuffed it up, shoving a couch in the back.
There you go. So, well, you got to deliver.
You got to deliver.
Your dad, I should say, and your dad's brothers, explain how the transition went from the boys to the four sisters.
It's kind of been a gradual evolution. Not having all four of us on board in leadership positions was never part of some grand plan. It just kind of
Yeah, you all were
happened.
Kind of doing your own things,
we all,
right?
We all graduated from college and did our own thing with mostly large international companies.
Right.
And then as opportunities arose within our organization, we were invited back, and if we wanted the opportunity, we took it. And fortunately, we all did, because now we can all get together for lunch every now and then. We've got 17 kids among the four of us. So having a quiet lunch with my sisters on a Tuesday afternoon out in Itasca, Illinois, there's nothing better.
I always call work my zen time.
Right?
It's like as easy as it gets for me.
Because Katie, you have four?
I have five.
You have five. Maureen, you have four.
Six.
Wow.
So there's 11 kids just between the two of us.
Yes.
This is why this is our zen time.
Somebody's got one set of twins.
I have
Maureen
the twins.
Does. Yeah. Just one set.
Just one. Yeah.
Yeah, but these kids are going to age into stock room like so fast. They're going to be back there working.
Oh, yeah. That's what we did. We every weekend that we could, we were working warehouse sales or stamping envelopes. I mean, that was kind of just what we did growing up. My dad never accepted anything less than hard work. That was just always his motto, and I think we've all kind of taken that inspiration and really carried the family flag, if you will.
Friends and Family Sale continues. Here's my blatant plug, because I believe in what you guys are doing. And it continues through the weekend, but make your picks by Monday, and you're going to make some major savings. So we'll talk more about that coming up. And then, Sandberg, you're going to talk about what they're going to do here?
I am.
Okay, stand by.
Does it involve
golf wallpaper?
No, Steve designed his home office, he thinks he's going to weigh in our office here, but we need professional help.
I think I'm smart enough to stay out of this one. Stand by. More with The Smith in just a moment.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Maureen and Katie are here, two of the four Smith bosses at Walter Reed Smith Furniture. And they're going to redecorate. What are they going to redecorate in specifics? Or I should say decorate, because we just moved into this building.
Right. So our office, the little office that kind of looks like an aquarium, all we have is the those desk things around the back end. So I'd like a bench in there. Steve wanted to have a couch. I don't want a couch for people because I feel they won't leave. I would like a somewhat of a hard bench across that window there, so that
how hard? Like an uncomfortably hard bench?
Slightly
like stylish, but it's like a 2 minute and get up and get out.
Exactly.
Mm. We'll find something that's stylish enough, but just unpleasant enough that nobody wants to stick around.
It's called the Justin bench.
Yeah.
You guys walk through here. This is a very nice new place that we have here, but there's a lot of glass.
A lot of glass.
A lot of glass. And I said, there's no place to go and just, you know, have my daily cleansing cry, where I just go and think about what didn't work on the show. But I've never been in an office space before where there wasn't a room where you could go and have a meeting that everybody else was talking about and wondering if it was about them. Have you seen a place like this where it's just glass in every office?
I have not.
But my first job, everything was open. It doesn't matter if you, the CEO to... That, you know, the guys at reception, everybody was in the wide open. There were no doors in the whole.
Well, if I remember right, Maureen, you've done more than your share of decorating as well. And Katie, you come from the side and still do it. So what does this place say to you? What's the feng shui of the hallway?
To me, this place says, we're in Chicago. Look at me. It's beautiful. Like, I don't know that you need much on the walls or anything, because really the art is the beautiful skyline that we have here in our city.
No question in the studios. Katie, agree or disagree?
I definitely agree. That was actually when you said a lot of glass. I was like, well, I think it's because of all these wonderful views, even though we can't see it today with the rain. Yeah. But you could certainly warm up the space. I think it needs a little bit of a decorator's touch.
They were in the green room, and I think one of our bosses said they rearranged the furniture in there to make it more zen. It might have been Violetta, the traffic person from the afternoon. And I could tell Maureen and Katie were like, well, this is an interesting layout.
The green room could use a little love. Yes, it could use a little Walter E. Smith.
Yes. Yes.
What's the most important thing? There's so much that goes into the process of style. But what's the most important thing if I'm going to redo Steve's office that you guys think about?
I think there's two things. One is to be functional, especially in office. But two, to be personal. You know, it's especially in an office, too. You know, you want to have your own personal touch. You want to be comfortable there. You want to kind of just show who you are with your space and feel at ease and comfortable in it.
I still hear golf wallpaper.
Yeah.
But I was just talking about.
We're going to find a little golf throw pillow or something for
Just like a gimme in the corner. Oh, look, we did something for you.
I think you'll be surprised. We'll sneak something in.
There'll be something in there?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So what do we do, Sandberg? How do we get this done?
Well, we're going to work with the girls.
And that means you're going to and I'm going to stay out of it?
Yeah, and then people can stay tuned and we'll find out what they plan for us. The nice thing is the office, the desks they chose are like a light gray. Then the wall thing we have there is a blue. I personally am a big fan of blue, so we're working with good colors in our office.
Well, gray's the color now, right?
We're seeing navy everywhere, too.
It's navy.
We're having a lot of fun now with green, so probably in the next 6 months in our stores, you'll see a little bit more green popping in. So it's kind of fun to be ahead of those trends and to always be watching for the next big thing.
Well, where do you guys, I think you guys as the trendsetters, where do you guys get your trends from?
Anywhere from just following designers online, like on Instagram, that's a great place. Also, we follow interior designers and retailers, like on the coast, really. California, New York have a lot of really good, there are a lot of trendsetting going on there. And then we also go to the furniture markets in High Point, North Carolina, where you see a lot of great furniture trends. And we go to the accessory show in Atlanta in January, too. And, it's really inspirational being there and being around these people that kind of lead the trends, and
what we saw in April was, I know you were asking about gray. We saw a lot of color, actually, at the April furniture market in North Carolina. So I think stay tuned. I think color's actually coming back in a big way.
Purple's
a big color right now.
I know. Hey,
go Cats.
That's what I give to this conversation.
Some of us
ultraviolet, to be exact. Yep.
Dave, your entire house is done in northwestern purple.
It's done in purple, but it's also done. Yeah. You know, we have a green couch and a green love seat in the living room, and my wife is saying, well, we got to get rid of the green couch. Uh-huh. But you're saying green's making a comeback.
Well, what depends on the shade.
Yeah, what shade of green are we talking here?
It's kind of, I guess it would be like an olive-ish green.
Okay, that could work. But we're seeing a lot more like deeper saturated emeralds. It's kind of a bigger
thing. Yeah, this wouldn't be that.
So, you know what, Dave? I think that you should step into one of our 10 Chicago area showrooms.
I think I'm going to do that.
And let us help you out.
I think I will do that.
All right, Sandberg, last word from you.
I just wanted to know if there was a trend thing that you guys thought was going to be big or didn't want to be a part of, but then had to get it at the store because people wanted it.
I would say the first thing that comes to mind is blush pink. Because it was huge in women's fashion, and we tried it on a couple things in our stores, and they didn't really take off. And I think that's because, you know, home purchases are intended to last a lot longer than a shirt that you find at H&M.
Sure.
So we tried it. We put it out there. We were on trend. It was super cute, and now we're on to the next thing.
Well, you know, that brings up the last question for me. Katie, you go into a house. They're lovely people. But you see something in the house where you go, whoa, this has got to go, but they just love it. What do you do?
Oh, I work around it. I work with it. If you love something, and it's, that usually means it's got sentimental value. And,
right.
You know, back to what I was saying about personalizing your space. If you love it, then we'll figure out a way to work it in. And,
so you can style around anything.
Yeah. I might be cringing in my head, but...
Like, what if Dave's a round coffee table wagon wheel with beer caps on it? Is that okay? Can you keep that?
You know what, though? If everything else around it looks good, there's ways we can accent it and make it look better than ever.
Well, his wife is lovely. So, you know, well, yeah, she dresses the room
up. And it has sentimental value.
Right.
Right?
Your college years. Exactly. Walter A. Smith, Friends and Family Sale. When are we wrapping up? Monday?
The 30th.
Oh, it's the 30th. Okay.
Yes.
Well, but we don't want to tell people they've got all the time in the world. They got to get on this.
Yeah, Monday.
Wrapping up, though. Tell you, it's almost July.
Right. So get to any of the 10
get
stores
the store,
and get in. And plus, you can download that $500 coupon right now.
Mm-hmm.
Smith.com. Yeah. Nice start. Great to see both of you.
Great to see you guys, too. Thanks for having us.
And we'll throw this all over social, on including Insta.
Yeah.
See what I did there?
Look at you.
Yeah. And also, Justin, for you, Friendster and MySpace.
Yeah, no, that's where I'm still there. I'm still there. I got so many friends on Friendster.
Say hi to your 47 children.
We'll give them a big hug from Uncle Steve.
Please do. 9:32, headlines next, 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
720 WGN.
White Sox! White Sox! Go, go, White Sox!
Let's go, 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 White Sox! We're with you all the way.
Steve Cochran Show continues live on CLTV and on 720 WGN. We're going to play Know Your 83, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Know Your 83 White Sox with Ron Kittle, Justin Coffin, lifetime Sox fan, and Chicago sports legend Dave Ennett. All before
who,
we no, talk about...
Be, who knows him better?
Well, no, yeah, we'll see. We'll find out. Here's my pal Ron Kittle. What's up, big fella?
You know, I'm sure Justin knows more than I do. I just played the doggone game.
That's the game show. Who knows the 83 Sox better, Ron Kittle or Justin Coffin?
Tell
him there's pills for that. I know that.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right. All right, so listen, on Monday, July 9th, the Chicago Baseball Cancer Charities again get together, and we have this wonderful outing, which was started by Billy Pierce many, many years ago, and Billy and company kept it going for all those years. And when Billy passed, Bob Pierce's son, and everybody kept it running. And Ron Kittle, you've been a huge part of this. It's a great day.
Well, you know, it really, 49 years ago, was found by Marv Samuel.
Well, that's true. That's right.
49 years ago, then after he passed, Billy took over for years. What a great man. Both of them were great men. They had a vision. Really, they were the stepping stone for charity golf outings, which was not heard of back then. So we get celebrity ball players to come out on their off day, give their time, play golf. You know, it's up at Twin Orchards Golf in what it goes, Long Grove, is that what it is? Yeah.
Yeah, it's Long Grove, yeah. Yep.
Great golf course, breakfast, lunch, dinner, raises money, probably over $18 million they've raised and donated in 49 years, which is phenomenal.
Goes to the Lurie Cancer Center and also to Camp One Step, this amazing camp we've talked about so many times on the show, where kids with cancer get to go and just be kids and have a great time and run around and be goofy and have a camp experience. Couldn't be bigger fans of both. So go to ChicagoBaseballCC.com, ChicagoBaseballCC.com. You can also search it on Facebook, Chicago Baseball CC or Chicago Baseball Cancer Charities. Grab a foursome, sponsor a hole, join us. Your money is going to a wonderful, wonderful event. It's a great deal, and plus you're going to meet a lot of cool people out there. People yeah, we've
absolutely.
Been fans of for years.
I won't be there this year. Unfortunately, I'm going to be in Russia that day, and I don't get back until a few days later. But you know what? I don't like missing it. I've been a big part of it for a long time. Yeah. I'm on their board. Bobby Pierce, you know, they strong-arm you to come out there to support them, and they work hard. And it's a long day, but it's very gratifying to see where all these funds go to and how they're distributed. And Camp One Step, when the kids come out and volunteer and help, it makes it even a special day.
You want to explain why you're in Russia, Vladimir?
You know what? I heard they got some vodka with my name on it. I'm not real sure.
Okay.
But, No, you know what? You know, I get a chance, or I'm getting a chance finally to do some traveling. And I think it's just my last journey overseas for a long time. And I figure maybe one day nobody will be able to see Russia, so we might as well see it now. While the World Cup is going on.
Cool idea. I'm looking forward to hearing how goes. And maybe we'll play a little golf when you get back. All right, before you go, we're going to come back, and we'll see who actually knows their White Sox.
I have a couple specific questions.
And bye. That's Ron Kittle, White Sox legend, Justin Kaufman, Dave Ennett. And I'll just sit here and watch and be amused.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
I just glanced at the Chicago. I just glanced at ChicagoBaseballCC.com. It looks like the Facebook site is probably the best place to sign up. But I'll search out some more information here for you because I want to make sure you have an opportunity again to get a foursome for you and your friends or a sponsorship or just come out for dinner. All the money raised is important. Ron Kittle, legend on the phone. By the way, how's the furniture business?
You know what? I've got three benches I got to get shipped out next week. Then I'm going to take a break for a little while. But other than that, it's going real well.
Master carpenter like no other does beautiful, beautiful work. It makes giant bats if your kid doesn't have one for his room yet. Oh. I'm talking about 15, 20, 30 feet high.
Get one, yeah.
All right, Justin.
35-year anniversary of the Chicago White Sox 1983 team that won the... AL East, I guess it was at
West.
The time. West.
West.
A question for you is, obviously, this was your rookie season. Tony La Russa was the manager. How important was your relationship with him, and what did he do to make you a good baseball player?
You know, Tony was a minor league manager when I was in the minor league also, so I've known him for quite a while, since 1978. I saw him grow, learn. I mean, Tony was like a sponge. He wants to know everything from everything. From everybody, and he wants to take that to beat you. You know, we had our issues, but I told him, hey, you put me in a lineup, I'm going to play 100% for you every single day, and I'll try to do the best I can. And, you know, maybe that's why you put me in a lineup quite a bit.
He sure did. I love the stat line, 35 homers, 100 RBIs. I remember that because I was a big baseball fan and a Sox fan, and I had the baseball cards. And I was just like, wow, that's perfect. 35 homers, 100 RBIs. Do you recognize to this day the accomplishment of being a rookie to be able to have those kind of stats?
You know, I never thought much of it, to tell you the truth. I had a lot of success in the minor leagues, hitting, 40 and 50 back-to-back and getting to the major leagues. But, you know, I went out there to compete with the guys. I wanted to be the hero every single night, whether you failed or succeeded. I mean, that was an attitude my father instilled in me. You know, work hard, give it your best. And in baseball, you know you're going to fail more than you do succeeding. But it was a pretty good feature. I think I finished second in home runs in American League. Tony Armas beat me, I think, by one, maybe two. But he played another 27 games more than I did. So, you know, it just happens.
Ron, correct me if I'm wrong. You, I believe, are the all-time leader in roof shots at Old Comiskey Park. Is there an official count on how many times you hit one on the roof?
Well, yes. Want me to tell you about it?
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
No.
I do want to hear.
There's 23 people that did it in all of baseball. Babe Ruth was the first. I was the last. I hit it 7 times.
Wow.
That's how about that?
Place would be Greg Luzinski hit it 3. And, you know, you had to hit it over 500 feet just to get it to the roof. And, you know, it's a big iron-working man from Gary, Indiana. You know, I just tried to hit it hard, not to intentionally try to hit it up on the roof. But, you know, it is a pretty cool thing to see the ball fly up on a roof.
Wow. Quick question for you. Rudy Law and Vance Law, did they get along?
Rudy got along and Vance with everybody. I mean, 1983 team was like, it was really close. It was like a house full of family. You know, maybe they didn't hang out together after the game, but when the game rang and you put on your uniform, you couldn't have had a closer team in all of baseball than what we had in 1983.
Okay, so my next question for all of Chicago, how much do you guys hate the 84 Cubs?
is a lot the word you're looking for?
Well, you know what? I'm not a hater, tell you the truth. You know, I wish everybody success. You know, I was glad they finally won the World Series. I had tickets in the center field bleachers. This is a long story short. I bought tickets, and I took my dad there and my family, and I got bugged so bad in center field. I was sitting by Bill Veeck at the time, matter of fact, and all of a sudden, my dad goes, "Well, you're not going to have fun watching any of these games." So we walked out to my car, and my dad gave me $5,000 cash. And I said, "What's that for?" He goes, "I just sold the rest of the tickets because I know you don't want to go back to the game."
That's dad.
For that particular point. But, I think my dad said that.
It's a great story.
For me to be there.
That is a great story. All right, pal, ChicagoBaseballCC.com, Chicago Baseball Cancer Charities. Actually, if you click on buy tickets on the website, you can buy a ticket to dinner, you can buy an individual golf spot, and I'm sure that you can also buy slots for your foursomes as well. Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, Jimmy Fox, Hank Greenberg, Ted Williams, Mickey Mantle, Bill Scourin, Elston Howard, Boog Powell, Harmon Killebrew, Sal Bando, Kirk Gibson, George Bell, wow, Jose Canseco, and Ron Kittle. These are your big guns. Luzinski, of course, when he's playing. Fisk, but yeah, that's got to be something else. I've never, I got to tell you right now, I never hit a wiffle ball that hard.
Yeah,
that's all right, guys. Well, I appreciate it, and it's a great day of golf.
All right, man.
Thanks, Ron.
Have a great trip to Russia. We'll see you when you get back.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. Bye.
See you later. Ron Kittle.
And the first in our series this summer of interviewing all the 83 White Sox. There's 40 guys or
something.
Can
we do the law guys together just to save time?
Exactly. They're both lawyers now. So
Bill and Wendy next, 720 WGN.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
All right. Bill and Wendy show starting now. Neither one of them are in the studio. Hey, Bill. Hey, Wendy!
Yeah, well, I'm going to go get
Bill's
Bill!
Running. Here comes
Wendy!
Bill, spinning out of the turn.
ChicagoBaseballCC.com. Buy tickets. Click on that.
I'm telling you.
And you'll be good to go.
83 Sox. That's our new summer series. We're going to get them all. We're going to get Kuzman.
It sounds cutting. It sounds
returns.
We're going to get some real
Dotson.
Rudy Law.
We're going to get Lamar Hoyt's beard.
Rudy Law, Vance Law, L.A. Law, all three from the 80s.
I would say they missed a golden opportunity to do the 80s baseball poster. You know, the Bash Brothers. And
Yeah.
They should have done the Court of Law. Rudy and Vance, right?
See what you did there?
Nobody listens to me.
See what you did there?
That's so good.
Right?
thanks to General John Borling, amazing guest. I'll remind you again. Taps on the Walls, poems from the Hanoi Hilton, memorized because they weren't actually giving him a Bic pen back then. John Borling is an amazing guy, and sosamerica.org is a website. We hope you will visit. What are you guys doing today?
Jay Moore was scheduled for tomorrow, Steve, but now has canceled.
He already
really
canceled?
I want to warn people who are excited. Yeah.
Or was it the weather?
Yeah, it's weather-related. He does not like this sort of weather, he says.
Couldn't get to a phone?
Yes. No, he's going to be in studio. So,
it's because you gave him all that crosstalk time yesterday. He's like, well, mission accomplished. I don't need to come in and do anything.
I know you're kidding, but anytime Wendy and I promote a guest more than 5 minutes in advance, something always
happens. What are you going to do instead of Jay Moore?
we don't have anything planned.
No, we'll figure something out.
Jay Moore stories.
When did you get the Jay Moore news?
Just moments ago. That's why we were late coming in. We were negotiating.
Rudy Law and Vance Law are available.
No, don't you
I would love to have the Law Boys in.
No. That's ours. The 83 Sox is ours. We have just announced to the world.
Yeah, that's great. Unless you guys take it, that's ours.
Did you know that Rudy Law and Vance Law are the daughters of the Smiths that have the Smith furniture place?
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, they're their daughters.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
No idea.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to this. Please listen to that.